The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back, and we're going to kind of wing this first hour, no pun intended. It has to do with the crash of the private jet, they call it an executive jet, which took the lives of 10 people, including, most importantly, Dmitry Utkin, that's U-T-K-I-N, Dmitry Utkin, and Yevgeny Prigozhin, the two top leaders of the Wagner PMC. That's private military corporation. Most of you who pay attention to geopolitics understand all about the Russian special military operation that has been going on in Ukraine for about 450 days now, something like that. They call it an SMO. It's much more than that. It's a war against Ukraine. But more than that, it's a war against the United States, NATO, the UK, and Ukraine versus Russia. That's what's going on right now. It's being fought on the corpse of Ukraine, but it's a major state-of-the-art conflict between Russia and the Western military powers. Make no mistake about it. That's what it is. Yes, some people talk about how it's a perfect and ideal laboratory to try all of these advanced high-tech weapon systems. They are trying advanced high-tech weaponry all the time. But more than that, they're learning how to use it and they're deploying it. This war has changed dramatically in the last 6 months technologically. The drone aspect of it is huge. The Russians have now about 25,000 drone operators near the front combat lines who are operating their drones. Same with Ukrainians. The Russians are, however, as usual, planning ahead. And they're building a force now of 180,000 drone operators, military combat drone operators. They have 25,000 deployed now. That's the number we get anyway. So this war is rather like World War I. The Russians have not won a major victory since May, and that was Bakhmut, otherwise known as Artemovsk. However you want. The Russian pronunciation and spelling is Artemovsk, but everybody knows it as Bakhmut. That's the Ukrainian term. That was the last victory that Russia really can look to in this entire SMO, the Special Military Operation. That victory was not achieved, however, by the Russian army. The Russian military was there, but they were in the background. The entire operation to take Bakhmut, virtually the entire operation, I don't want to overstate it, but 90% of it plus was undertaken by the private military corporation, Wagner PMC. They did it. It cost them over 22,000 men, their own men. Now, a lot of people laughed at Wagner in the beginning because they offered, through, of course, Vladimir Putin and his counseling, they offered freedom for all prisoners in all prisons in Russia if they would serve a period of time in the Wagner PMC. And I think it was 6 months. If they served and survived, they were given their freedom and completely pardoned from whatever their transgressions may have been. So in the beginning, Wagner PMC was actually an army of prisoners. If you think about it, it was a mercenary army of prisoners. They were being paid, but they were being promised freedom and certainly complete exoneration for whatever they had done to get them in trouble. So they had no problem with manpower. Now, later on, and I think this began about 4 or 5 months ago, Yevgeny Prigozhin actually opened Wagner PMC recruiting offices in many cities all across Russia. And they were standing up in line to try to get in to join Wagner, because Wagner had done so well, and in May they had actually defeated the Ukrainians, the United States, the UK, and NATO in Bakhmut. Remember, everything the Ukrainians do of a strategic value is something that comes from the U.S. military, the Pentagon, and or NATO. But most all of it is coming from the Pentagon. Our best military minds, our best tacticians, are advising and directing, and in the field, too, by the way. We have people on the ground. We've got a lot of boots on the ground in Ukraine, have for a long time. So the Wagner PMC took the Battle of Ukraine, turned it around, and defeated the Ukrainians and liberated the city. Well, it was flattened. There's a lot of it just in ruins now, but a victory is a victory. That action by that private military corporation actually enthralled and excited the Russian nation like nothing else in this special military operation. They were heroes. Prigozhin was a hero. Utkin stayed in the background. He was the man who actually founded Wagner PMC. Prigozhin and he were very good friends. Prigozhin was the colorful one. He was the Robin Hood. He was the man who was not afraid to stand up and criticize the Russian Ministry of Defense, Shoigu, and other generals involved as being incompetent and having cost the lives of many Russians by poor supplying, poor tactics. He blasted them, Prigozhin. Now, also remember that Wagner PMC got most all of its money from the Russian government. That's my understanding of it. They underwrote the Wagner operation from the beginning. So Wagner had money, but they didn't have what they call simpatico with the Ministry of Defense. So they were kind of a rebellious group from the beginning. But boy, were they good on the ground. And I've had people, and I don't think he'd mind, Russell Bentley made it quite clear. He said, Wagner is the most competent, brilliant, spectacular military fighting force in the world right now. That's what he said. And I agree with him. I've never seen anything more brutal and rugged than I saw when I watched how Bakhmut was taken down by Wagner. They just went in there and gutted it out. And that made Prigozhin a folk hero in Russia. People always talked about Wagner and Prigozhin. And the name Wagner, by the way, where does it come from? It wasn't named after Richard Wagner, the German composer, although that would certainly be a warranted thing to consider doing. But Dmitry Utkin was known by his military handle as Wagner. That's where the name came from. And Prigozhin came in, and he was the media side of the two men who ran the company. Now, what happened? The two jets that took off flying to St. Petersburg were designed to carry Prigozhin in one and Utkin in the other. You never put all your eggs in one basket. That's a basic rule of any competent military organization. And Wagner certainly was competent. For some reason, somehow, both men got on the same plane. Maybe they had severely pressing work to do, and they didn't want to lose the hour of flight time just sitting around doing nothing. I don't know. But that plane, and I think all of you have seen the videos now of it coming down. We have a professional pilot coming on in just a couple of minutes who's going to talk about this in great detail. There is no question now that that plane was brought down artificially. It didn't have a mechanical failure. It was shot down, or there was a bomb on board, and it exploded, and the detonation blew parts of the plane off of it, maybe the tail, maybe a wing, we don't know. But do not discount the possibility that if it wasn't a bomb, it was in all likelihood not a surface-to-air missile, because people can see contrails going right up, and you'll know right away from where these were approximately launched if there was one or more. This was probably an air-to-air missile, which could have been launched 200, 250, 300 miles away. These things have incredible reach now. An F-35 could have, we don't know where, but the distance, if you do the mapping and do a layout, draw a circle around the crash site, you can figure out, you go 200 or 300 miles, and there's plenty of room to launch an air-to-air missile. In other words, Prigozhin and Utkin were murdered, as were the other seven people on board that plane. How was it known that they were both on one of the two planes? The second plane went on to land safely. Unfortunately, neither man was on that plane. They went down with the one that was hit. It sounds like somebody knew that both of them were on the same plane. If that's true, it suggests spies in the Wagner organization who tipped off Western sources, and that went right to the Pentagram, and they launched their missile, if that's what happened. Or it was someone on the ground who had access to the aircraft. And believe me, this is being looked into right now by Wagner and probably the Russians as well. That plane was either blown up by a surface-to-air missile, I should say, one missile, maybe two, we don't know, or a bomb. Okay. People did report two contrails in the area before the explosion and crash, up high. The plane was flying at altitude, I think 25,000 feet, something like that. Okay, that gives you a pretty good thumbnail, I think, of what happened. This is a tremendous, huge loss for Russia and its special military operation. Russia and its army and all of its highly competent professional soldiers, tacticians, strategists, special military operation, technical experts, you name it. They have not had one victory since Wagner took Bakhmut. That was not the Russian army even then. So right now, they're in a static position, a defensive position. Yes, they're holding off every Ukrainian attack. Yes, they're inflicting extraordinary losses on the Ukrainian Zionist regime that couldn't care less about wasting human life. The suicide attacks against the Russian defensive positions are insane. Even the Russians are imploring the Ukrainians to stop the bloodshed and surrender. How are they doing it? They're sending over artillery shells, which in the air detonate and drop leaflets, urging the Ukrainians to get on their cell phones, call this number, and arrange to surrender. That's very interesting, and it's happening right now as we speak. So the Russians don't want to keep killing these people, but the Zionist, communist Bolsheviks who are running that country couldn't care less about the Christian men that they are slaughtering. We know now over 400,000 human beings have been killed by the Russian military, sent right into the teeth of the meat grinder by the Ukrainian government. It's not a government. I shouldn't even say that. It's just a regime. And I'll tell you another thing. It's all controlled by Zionist Jews. These are facts. I'm not making this up. And I can guarantee you that that military is not one that would have a lot of Jewish soldiers in it. They don't do that to themselves. So you get it. I think these are often called Christians, and whatever you call them, they are not Jewish, and they are being sacrificed in extraordinary numbers. It's brutal what's happening. Now they're talking about total mobilization in Ukraine. What does that mean? That means they're going a step beyond going out in the streets and capturing anyone they can get their hands on, any males between the age of 16 and 65. And they're putting all of those people in uniform, giving them 2 weeks training, giving them an AK, and sending them up as cannon fodder to be ground up in the Russian meat grinder. This is crazy stuff that's going on. Crazy. No air support, nothing like that. But the U.S. is behind it, number one. The U.K. is number two. I'd say NATO is number three. So keep that in mind. All right. What I want to do is bring on Pilot Mike, who's been on the program before. He's a professional aviator. He's been at this a long time. And we're going to talk about the actual plane crash after I play a video first. So, Mike, welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here. And give us your quick thoughts on this. Then we're going to play something, and we'll come back and do it in more detail.
Good evening, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. And I wish it was under better circumstances. One of these days, I hope we could just talk about cooking and puppies or something.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
Such tragedies that we have. But contrary to popular belief, airplanes don't just fall out of the sky. And that's the number one thing. This aircraft fell out of the sky in a completely uncontrolled attitude, and it was just free falling, basically. And that is not normal. Believe it or not, there are normal crashes, right? Airplanes and accidents are very predictable on a lot of in the way they impact, the way they come out of the sky, and the way they act.
Right.
And you can tell, and it's, you know, I find it very. I also find it very suspect that it was videotaped. That's just me. I look at this, I go, well, isn't that coincidental that here's some kids filming an airplane falling from, I believe it was at 28,000 feet,
right.
You know, and capturing this thing just into the impact.
I think the reason why, Mike, if I might say, I think that they heard an explosion. Looked up,
yeah.
And began filming. And the reason I say
that
is that, yeah, you've all seen the video, and if you look at the very beginning of it, you'll see some white puffy clouds. They're not clouds, though. White puffy smoke. It's in a little section to the left of where the plane is falling. That looks like the point of impact or the point of bomb detonation to me. And I think
exactly.
They heard it, and they looked up.
That's very, very plausible. And yes, when you do look at the video, that was the first thing I noticed was this giant plume of white smoke, which is indicative of an explosion. And now the question is, was this external, as in a missile, an air-to-air missile? Because you would have seen a smoke trail from a surface-to-air missile, and they have a much larger warhead on them. So you'd have seen an even bigger puff of smoke. Or was this from an internal explosive? And that's the question. Now, what will come out in their investigation? Will we get the real truth? Will we get propaganda from our side? Will we get propaganda from their side? We don't know until we see something come out in the form of a report. But it was most definitely an unnatural catastrophic failure. This was an act of terrorism or an act of aggression by an outside military force.
Correct.
That's the only way I can see it.
Let me add to what you're saying, and I've scanned the reporting, so-called news reporting, that is available on Google. I looked, and if you look, the lead story is Reuters, one of the most outrageous disinformation sources on the planet. And it says, as a headline 2 hours ago, no information to support missile strike theory for Prigozhin crash. If you turn that around, you're probably going to be much closer to reality than you'll ever be with Reuters. Lots of information hidden now, but coming out to support a missile strike on the Prigozhin plane. You're going to see more and more. I think the Russians will let this out. Here's the problem, though. As this ratchets up, Mike, and you know this, the danger of escalation to a nuclear posture is going to grow. There's no question about it. This was their Robin Hood. This was Russia's Robin Hood, murdered in broad daylight. Here's another one, Washington Post. Let me finish here real quick. Prigozhin likely dead. Explosion may have caused plane crash. Well, it's the first Western report I've seen so far suggesting a possible explosion. And then CNN, of course, the Communist News Network. What could have caused the plane crash that reportedly cost the life of Yevgeny Prigozhin? Here's another one. Prigozhin plane crash. Putin ordering plane to be shot down. Putin ordering plane to be shot down because of the attempted alleged overthrow of his government 2 months ago. Well, complete lies. Unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable lies. And one more. Plane crash video surfaces after Wagner chief killed in crash. There's one more here. Putin comments on apparent death of Prigozhin. Now, this is 12 minutes ago, and Putin made a formal statement about it two times now. And he's once again standing tall, as Vladimir Putin always does. Okay, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, well, one thing I was doing also was I was perusing some of the pilot chat rooms, and this came up. And, of course, the first thing everybody was saying, Putin shot it down. Putin shot it down. So the propaganda is out there. And this is what really baffles me about people is they spread their own propaganda. They have a belief that Putin is a certain way and that he's this tyrant, that we have to fight him because the news media has been saying this for months now. And people just automatically react to what they have been told and the biases they hold, that, well, now it has to be Putin that shot this down.
And yeah, it's called programming the sheep.
Anywhere.
They program the sheep
all the time. Yeah. And that's one thing I noticed in the pilot chat rooms. There was not even a neutral discussion as what could have brought this airplane down. Look at how it fell out of the sky.
Yeah.
It was spinning as if it was either missing a wing or missing its tail. There were a couple points where it looked like it tumbled end over end. And that would tell me that the tail was missing.
Thank you. I tried to stop action, the video, several times to see if I could make out what piece was missing. And when you said tail, when you said tail, that made sense. It did look, I didn't see two wings rotating.
Right.
I couldn't see much of anything. And it did do a 180 at one point.
Yeah.
It completely reversed its end-to-end trajectory down toward the ground. So those people were probably alive on board, strapped in. Horrible, horrible way to go. All right, stand by for just a couple minutes.
Okay.
And we'll be right back with Pilot Mike and continue. I'm going to play a military summary commentary on this tragedy in just a few minutes. Hold on. Okay, welcome back. And if you just joined us, you'll be able to listen to this, of course, in the archives. And it'll be repeated after the normal program run of 3 hours. We are looking at a situation in Russia now that is in flux. I don't think there's any grave danger that things are going to fall apart by any means. That's not on the table. What is on the table, though, is Russia has lost its folk hero to justify this special military operation. It was a whole lot easier when Yevgeny Prigozhin and Wagner defeated the Ukrainians in Bakhmut, Artemovsk, and liberated the city. That was the last victory that Russia had, and that was in May. And then in June, Prigozhin's troops marched from their encampment in northeastern Donbass toward Moscow. They stopped at Rostov-on-Don and kind of set up the temporary shop there. They were going to register the strongest complaints against the Russian Ministry of Defense and Shoigu, who runs it. Prigozhin and his men did not like or appreciate what the Russian military was not doing to help them to the extent that they felt that they should have been covered. They weren't getting that kind of support. All right, the other side of the coin, where do we go from here? Sergei Surovikin, the head of the Air Force in Russia, this is the chief of the Air Force, was arrested the same day that Prigozhin and his Wagner troops marched toward Rostov-on-Don. He was just sacked as Air Force chief, in fact, the other day. So Surovikin was known as General Armageddon. The only person in the kind of faceless Russian military who had an image, so to speak. It was pale in comparison to the image that Prigozhin had. But Surovikin, now fired as Air Force chief, is being suggested as the possible person to take over the Wagner Group and run it. So we will see. All right, what I want to do now is play, as you know, at the top of the homepage, we've been giving, I think, the best military analysis we can by military summary. And that is a Belarusian operation. I don't know the guy's name. He is a citizen of Belarus, but he's outstanding. He has a Russian accent. He knows what's going on. And these videos at the top of the homepage are really extraordinary in terms of their analysis. The narrator has clear ties. He's the editor as well, with sources that most people could only dream about. So let me play this, and then we'll get back to Mike and do our talk about what we hear now and about the actual shoot down or takedown of that aircraft. Oh, real quick before we jump into this, Mike is a pilot. He flies jets of this size quite often. What about this plane itself? Is Embraer, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's the Embraer 135 is the airline designation. In the corporate version, it's the Legacy, I believe it's the Legacy 600. I have several friends that have flown them. It's an exceptionally safe aircraft. This is actually the second incident of this aircraft. The first one was in Brazil when a charter company out of Long Island was picking one up from the factory. They were flying it back, and they had a midair collision with the Brazilian airliner 737, and the 737 was the plane that crashed, and the crew in the Embraer landed safely. It's a very reliable aircraft. They've been flying them throughout the United States for years. They have hundreds of thousands of hours on those airframes fleet-wide, and it's a well-built machine. Everyone I know who has flown it, they like flying it. It's a good machine. It's very safe, very simple to fly, reliable systems. So this isn't a case of just pure mechanical failure and happenstance from the fleet-wide perspective.
Okay.
Intentional.
Thank you. All right, here's the video from Military Summary talking about the events right up to the moment.
Hello, my dear friends. You're on the Military Summary channel, and today we will discuss the situation in Ukraine on the 24th of August of 2023. Today we have a lot of very interesting updates, so let's start. And of course, the most important update that as a result of terrorist attack, the head of Wagner, Prigozhin, and his right hand, Dmitry Utkin, was killed as a result of that terrorist attack. That was terrible, and the Russians lost not just the businessman, not just the mercenary, not just the most famous soldier, probably, or the head of organizations. The Russians lost the hero. Was the leader who was moving and leading the Russian army to the victory. And basically, currently, there are no such person on the territory of Ukraine. There is no such a person in Russia who can be as famous as Prigozhin and who can do the things that he did. And this is very terrible and this is very difficult because lots of people, there is, of course, the Minister of Defense of Russian Federation, Sergei Shoigu, there is Valery Gerasimov also. These two people can replace Prigozhin, but they can replace him on the paper. You know that they say that the power is not the thing that you can give to somebody. The power is the thing that you can take by yourself, that you are able to take by yourself. And Prigozhin was the man of power because the power he had, he took this power with his own hands, with his own bloody hands, when he was storming and attacking Popasnaya, the settlement of Popasnaya and Artyomov, Skorobakhmut. When talking about Shoigu and Gerasimov, nobody can adapt them or replace by them Shoigu because it's not the power. Because the power, the Russians currently need to start everything everything from the beginning. They need to start creating their own hero, the man who will lead the Russian army to the victory. Of course, we can say that Putin is the leader, he can lead the Russian army, but Putin is not the commander. Putin is not the person who can build strategical plans to start offensive operation, to be on the ground. The only thing that Putin can do is to replace, dismiss, and adopt this or that person on this or that position. And so this is the main difference. Currently, the Russians don't have a man of power, an army leader who can do a lot of things, who can criticize the Ministry of Defense, who can stand for the soldier, and who can tell the truth to the main Russian military authorities. From now on, there is no such a person on the ground, and this is a very big loss for the Russians. A very big loss, and there is no man who can replace him. So this is the reason the Russians need to start from the beginning. For example, today the president of Russian Federation gave his apologize for people, for men, for family, to families whose relatives died in those planes and so on. He talked a lot about Prigozhin. He said a lot of good words about him and so on. And after all this situation, we start all this speech, the meetings with the people, we start receiving lots of very interesting updates regarding Wagner's. Lots of channels who are very close to Wagner start reporting that Wagner teams, Wagner commanders, receive an order to start redeployment process to the south. And the sources are saying that the Russians took a decision to reinforce the Russian southern team, southern army, with Wagners who were located on the territory of Belarus. Of course, probably this is a very nice trick, very nice solution for Russian forces. First of all, this is a media thing. This is the media thing that can break the Ukrainian spirit, that can break their willing to fight. But from the other side, we have one question. If this piece of information is correct, that the Russians took a decision to redeploy Wagner forces to the south, the question is, who is going to lead this army? Who is the man who will have spirit, who will have will to fight? And we need a lot of people to believe this person. Who can replace Prigozhin? And to tell the truth, when talking about the current situation, there is no such a person who can replace Wagner. Just one man, except one person. And today we got some updates from some Russian sources that Prigozhin will be replaced when Wagner's will be redeployed to the south, that Prigozhin will be replaced by Suravikin, the king, or the, like, how he's called, the man of Armageddon, or the Armageddon himself. He was very close to Prigozhin. We heard that after the Prigozhin attempt military coup, when he was dismissed from his position, Suravikin was dismissed from his position, first of all, he was arrested and so on. His situation was very bad, and the Russians were planning to maybe to got him in prison. At least this is the piece of information we got from the open source. But today, this week, we got update that he was replaced by another person, by another man, and currently there were no updates about his destiny. And now we start receiving updates that probably Suravikin will be returned and he will replace Prigozhin, and he will be in charge of Wagner's in the south, in the battle of Robotina, Urajaina, and so on. And the thing is that Wagner's are not the soldiers, is not an army whose main purpose is to defend. They're stormtroopers. So as I understand, probably there's a very high chances that the Russians will soon launch their own counteroffensive operation. And this is probably the most important thing, to start the Russian counteroffensive. And the thing is that the last normal victory that the Russians managed to achieve during the special military operation took place in May, when Wagner's managed to capture Bakhmut. That was the last Russian victory in this special military operation during the previous, in this year. And this is a very big problem, because if you're losing territory, if you're losing bridges, if you're losing air defense systems, if you're losing your ships, if you're losing territory, small villages and so on, you start getting tired of the situation, the level of your trust reduced, and you feel very tired of this war. And basically, we can see the situation on the ground. And the final strike against the Russian spirit, against the Russian willing to fight, was the kill of Prigozhin. And currently, the Russian authorities, the Russian commanders understand that they need to break the media situation and they need to bring the victory. And not just the victory, like taking under control a small village like Sako and Vanzetti, where we can find two buildings, not the victory like taking under control the settlement like Novaya Gorovka somewhere in the Kupiansk front line. The Russians need territory and the towns. The Russians need to capture the towns like Avdiivka, like Kupiansk, like, let's say, Velika Novoselovka, Orekhov, Gulyaypole. The Russians need to create the new front line. They need to return their trust to the military authorities after a line, a row of defeats that took place since the end of the Battle of Bakhmut. Just remember, during the previous 3 months, the Russians, of course, nobody says that the Ukrainians are winning. No, the Ukrainians are losing. The Ukrainians have had significant number of losses, but we don't feel some problems with them in comparison with the Russians. Since the beginning of the end of the Battle of Bakhmut, the Russians lost a lot of settlements on the Vremyevka tactical bridgehead. Currently, they have lost Rabotina. The Ukrainians managed to destroy the bridge one more time. Yesterday, the Ukrainians managed to land in Crimea and to make a small operation in this area. The Ukrainians managed to return control over Antonov Bridge. The Ukrainians managed to force the Russians to step back from the territories that was captured by the Wagners in the vicinity of Bakhmut and Artyomovsk. And finally, the Ukrainians managed to kill the Prigozhin, the head of Wagners. Lots of losses, a lot of very small failures, and if we calculate everything, we see the big problem, the big, not problem on the ground, not the problem like with military situation, but the problem with the spirit and with the problem with the willing to continue the special military operation. The Russians need victories, and Prigozhin was just one person who gave the Russians those victories when talking about the recent and latest phases of the special military operation. If the Russians are not able to break the media situation, and if the Russians are not able to start providing the Russians victories, they will lose not from perspective of military perspective, they will lose from the spirit perspective, and probably and even the loss of the war in the spirit perspective is much more difficult and terrible in comparison with the loss in military way, because even if you lose a settlement in military way like Ukrainians in Bakhmut, they found the power and they found forces to continue regrouping and to continue counterattacking, and we see the results of that regrouping, that spiritual regrouping from the Ukrainian side. Furthermore, one more time, some sources are saying that probably Surovikin will be in charge of Wagners, they will redeploy to the south, and they will begin their own counteroffensive operation. And the main purpose of that counteroffensive operation is not just to take Malatakhmachko or Orekhov, the purpose is to force the Ukrainians to step back as far as possible to Dnipro and to establish the front line along the Dnipro River, and maybe even to enter Zaporozhye. So we'll see whether it's another speculation from the Russian sources or it's true, because anyway, the Russians don't have much time. Sooner or later, in a week or in two or three, the Russians will be forced to start acting, because the Ukrainians are not sleeping. They will continue attacks, they will continue terrorist operations, they will continue striking Moscow with drones, they will continue killing Russian officers, Russian soldiers, Russian patriots, and they will continue doing all these things that they have been doing since the beginning of the special military operation. Now let's move to...
Okay, there's a pretty good summary. I really like this guy. He's excellent. He's got a fine way of looking at things militarily, but his own opinions are always worth listening to. You can see these videos at the top of the homepage. They're always up there. I update them every day. So there you go. All right, your thoughts on this whole thing, Pilot Mike, what do you think?
Well, first off, we got to figure out who benefits from the death of Prigozhin. It's certainly not Putin. He put the guy back in his place when they had their uprising. It's definitely Ukraine's, NATO, the West. It's
Oh, it's Washington, D.C.
Oh, absolutely.
That's where it is.
Absolutely.
The Pentagon,
it's,
you bet.
Just looking at the video, I mean, I hate to draw conclusions. As my training as a pilot, you never draw conclusions until you have all of the facts. But you and I both know we'll never have all of the facts as to what happened in this accident, in this crash, and this murder of these 10 people. But from the video, it definitely looks like the airplane was taken down. I was just going through while listening to him. I was looking at photographs of the crash site. The airplane didn't nose into the ground as in what normally happens in a lot of crashes, that the aircraft noses in. This it crashed pretty much flat lengthwise. The fuselage hit the ground lengthwise.
Yeah, it went
so
flat.
It went splat. Basically, it just went splat. I'm trying to look at pictures of the tail. There aren't any really good ones. It looked like the tail was mostly intact, so it could have been a wing that was taken out. It could have been, if there was an explosive device, the aircraft is pressurized. You don't need a large explosive to take down an aircraft if it's inside the fuselage or near the pressure vessel, near the pressure bulkhead in the back or in the front. Normally in the back, that's where your luggage compartment is on many aircraft. And if you had a small explosive device that would, penetrate the pressure vessel, the internal pressure of the aircraft is going to magnify that explosion. Right? It's like popping a balloon.
Mike? We're talking about it. When you say small explosive device, I want people to get this picture in their mind. What took John F. Kennedy Jr. down, blew the tail off his plane, was apparently an explosive device not much bigger than a pack of cigarettes.
No, you don't need much. You don't need much. If people knew how aircraft were really constructed, I mean, we're talking thin aluminum sheets that are riveted to little I-beam looking structures that we call bulkheads and formers and ribs. An airplane is hollow. It's really hollow all throughout it. It's a frame covered by aluminum, at least in the case of the Embraer and most airplanes. Now we have composite materials, but the materials themselves are very thin. They have to be thin. They have to be light. And then it's the skeleton of that airplane holding the coverings together that gives it its rigidity. And so it doesn't, and then you fill it with air, you pressurize it. It doesn't take much to, catastrophically damage it on an explosive. 1 or 2 pounds of a plastic explosive could take down that aircraft. It doesn't take much. Someone who knows where to put it, they put it in there, they get up to, whatever their cruising altitude is, and boom, it lets go. The pressurization in there, again, the pressure inside of it along with the explosion, it's a catastrophic failure. It could sever all the control lines. They have no control of the aircraft. They're now sitting as passengers to their doom. It's not a pretty sight. It's not a pretty thought. So any of those scenarios could have happened. It definitely wasn't just a pure mechanical failure. Things of that nature are very, very rare.
I'm going to stick with, at this point, a surface missile. No, I'm going to stay with the surface, the air-to-air missile. Forget the surface aspect. That would have been seen by too many people. So I think we've got to think air-to-air, and I think a long distance. Now, the other sci-fi angle would be, they did it with a laser from space. But they could have. It's possible. I believe that technology exists. However, I think it was a wing, and I think what you said earlier, we talked earlier today, that on the way down, there's a kind of a white trail, and that may have been fuel. That may have been fuel. The plane was not burning on the way down. It only started burning when it hit the ground. By then, most of the fuel was gone, so the fire wasn't horrible. It was bad, but it wasn't didn't incinerate everything. So I think honestly, air-to-air missile is my take at this point.
And if it was an air-to-air missile, the F-22, the F-35, they're stealth aircraft. They have the capability to go in undetected.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have that capability. We can defeat their, you know, a lot of their radars. We don't have a whole lot of the F-22s. That's a very, very effective fighter. And they carry, you know, long-range missiles. They can hit it, you know, 100, 200 miles away in that range. They could get in and get out, and nobody would even know.
I agree.
That's a fully plausible thing. I mean, we've been doing some dastardly deeds, unfortunately, folks. America is not as squeaky clean as you think.
No, well, America's not being run by Americans. Not anymore.
No, exactly.
So we'll have a formal Russian inquiry and all that, but I wouldn't pay a whole lot of attention to it unless they actually tell the truth. But to tell the truth is going to escalate the entire gravity of the war. It's going to push us closer to nuclear confrontation if they tell the truth, that plane was brought down by Western interests.
Yeah. Regardless of what we think, I would say it was Western interests. You know, our little Zionist banking friends who, you know, want to rebuild greater Israel and rule the world and enslave the Goyim. We know how that goes. That's where it's at. And they want World War III. And this is a very good step towards it.
Indeed. Mike, thanks very much for being here and weighing in professionally. It's very helpful. Indeed. We'll watch this and I appreciate it. Stay in touch.
Thank you, Jeff. Will do.
All right.
Take care.
Okay.
Good night.
Pilot Mike, and there you go. All right. That's our best summary in an hour for you to consider and contemplate. All right. We're going to take a break and come right back. Lots ahead.